turn up every day with a great attitude. Then maybe those odd one or two that you can't, just don't go. What we do is not that hard. What's hard sometimes is doing it every day.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry Sales Professionals, Property Managers and Leaders. With thanks to our partner, Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Today, my guest is a senior leader in the LJ Hooker Group with over 30 years' experience. He is the head of the Captain's Club and was named LJ Hooker's World Champion Auctioneer. Welcome to the show, Paul Moore.
Thank you, Sam. Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here today. I was struggling to come up with questions for you because you wear so many hats at LJ Hooker. Coach, regional manager, head of the Captain's Club, franchise owner for a number of years. Which one are you wearing today?
My primary role these days is a business coach, a growth coach for the offices. And the Captain's Club is our recognition and reward program for our high achievers. And, you know, they're a good group of people to work with. They're going hard and performing at a level that's as good as you get in the industry.
Yeah, and it's challenging times out there at the moment too. So
interesting though, Sam, I'll share this with you. Our top performers, we call it the top 15%. There's various levels within that. But whilst we nominate benchmarks for them to hit to requalify each year, we always check that top 15%. And that's sort of the safety blanket. If the market did fall away, well, there would be a lower level of acceptance. But you know what? The captains are performing at their normal benchmarks. We really haven't seen any fall by them. Not saying there's not fall across the industry, but the high achievers seem to be still doing what they do.
You know, we are hearing that across the industry that the top agents have pivoted and still performing really well. Is there anything that you think that the guys are doing at LJ Hooker, that the top agents, what are they doing really well at the moment?
I've done quite a few interviews of late with them, trying to sort of see if there's some secret,
secret sauce,
formula. I think what they're telling me is they've upped their communication. They've probably got back to attempting to provide higher levels of customer service. I'd like to think they're always providing good levels, but I think they've upped the ante in that regard. I think you've probably heard, listings are a bit tight around various marketplaces. I think there's a bit more respect being shown to buyers than perhaps at other times as well. And they're all customers and they all end up buying and selling, don't they? So, yeah.
Let's rewind a bit in your career. I'm interested to know how guys like you have had such a long career in the real estate industry. So you started back in 1999 at the Browns Plains office.
It was actually 1988.
Oh, 1988. Geez, I'm 11 years out.
Oh, my God.
All right. So tell me about that. Did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
All right. I was actually in a clerical sort of role prior to that, but I was also a disc jockey. I had an inner city gig 3 nights a week till 3 a.m. on top of 9 to 5 Monday to Friday.
In the 80s, that must have been fun.
I was a single man in those days. But I was also playing football, so sort of training a couple of nights a week, working a couple of nights a week, working 5 days a week, and got married in July 88 and had a few weeks off for a honeymoon, came back and a week later, whilst at my show, I collapsed in a fair bit of pain and had a twisted bowel. Emergency operation the next day to cut about 20 centimetres of the intestine out and joined it back up. And for the next 6 weeks, I was a pretty sick boy. So I pretty much could read the paper. I didn't have the energy for too much else. And I saw a job one day. I still remember the ad. It said Hut Like Farlap. That wasn't the bit that caught my attention. It was more the name, Peter Crowther. He was the sales manager at Browns Plains. And I'd played football with his brother. And I knew Mick, his brother, was working with his brother. And I rang up Mick and I said, you reckon I could do that? And he said, oh, yeah, I reckon you could. And he said, I'll get Peter to give you a call. And out I went and had an interview. And I was scrawny as. I've been so sick. But anyway, against his better judgment, he gave me a chance. And I gave up my existing job. I stopped playing football. I gave up DJing and poured all of that energy into real estate. Yeah, it seemed to go okay.
Yeah, and I imagine you guys are still mates now because Peter Crowther is still head of Sunnybank Hills. And
yes, he is, yeah, still good mates. And, happy to say I'm really pleased that I did start with him because he was a great teacher at a young age when we were all a bit, well, let's say, energetic. And I was taught the right way. I've often questioned whether if Peter hadn't have got hold of me and taught me what he taught me, whether I'd still be in the game. You know, I've seen so many other business owners since. I thought, geez, if I'd have started with them, I would have been gone again in 6 months. But I was lucky enough to start with a good one and learn so many good things.
Yeah, they say that a good mentor goes a long way in real estate for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Do you remember your first sale?
I do. Absolutely. Bamble Street at Marsden, $69,500.
How did you win that as a listing, as a young agent?
No, I didn't win the listing. Back in the late 80s in Browns Plains, we would have had 700 listings in the office. So you sold anything you could. It was my first day on roster. You had to learn the stock for a week or two and then they put you on roster. First day on roster, I got this bloke off the window and took him around, showed him, and we've got a little bit of time. I showed him this house and I remembered the owner of the house, the lady, has been so lovely when I'd been around learning my stock. And I think he offered 67 and a half and he was moving down from Kingaroy for work purposes. So she had told me she'd take 69 and a half and that, you know, 72 was the list price sort of thing, something like that. And anyway, so it was a Friday. I've organised to go down to present the offer. Peter and his brother Mick and a few of them said, well, we're going to the pub. You just go down, submit that. If, you know, she won't take it, just get it crossed out, put what she will and, you know, initial it. So down I went. The husband's home. I hadn't met him before. And this lovely lady turned into a psycho when she saw 67 and a half. Literally call me for things I hadn't been called before or since. It was like someone flicked a switch. I sat there thinking, my God, what have I done getting into real estate? I told you 69 and a half. I said, well, look, we can just cross that out. And she wouldn't have a bar of that. It had to be a new contract. And so I tried to sort of explain. Anyway, husband finally, he hadn't said boo, very skinny little fella with a beard. He's sitting there, finally said, oh, you know, why don't you calm down a bit? She threw a hot cup of coffee in his face, went out the house, down the stairs, stood in the middle of the street screaming like a wild person. I walked out to the top of the stairs with him. He was obviously hurting. And I said to him, I think I might leave. I don't think. And he said, yeah, it might be better that you do. And neighbours were coming out. And I thought, oh, geez, this is interesting. So I drove up to the pub and the boys were all buying me beers and congratulations. I said, well, hang on. They wouldn't believe that happened to me. They said, no, that's ridiculous. It's only $2,000. What are you talking about? Anyway, long story short, we did sell it for her, but I had to drive to Kingaroy to get new contract signed.
That was certainly a baptism of fire too. And obviously, you know, you're dealing with people in their homes, so you see a lot of that sort of thing as an agent.
Yeah, no, it was fairly memorable. So that's why I can still tell that story. And before settlement, she was ringing the office and she was going to ruin my career and she was going to get rid of me. And I think she was a bit nuts. But anyway, hope she got on with life and did all right. They stopped putting the calls through to me. I was getting a bit traumatised.
Yeah, I could. And you still went back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, yeah, that's the train.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for younger agents? Because you always come up against strange situations with people like that. What's your advice to younger agents if they haven't sort of hit that sort of thing yet?
What I strongly advise is the more emotional someone else gets, the less emotional you get.
Yeah.
You slow down, stay calm, stick to the facts, give them some options and just see where you can lead them. Steady as she goes and listen to what they, you know, why it is that they're getting like they're getting. When you see people in real estate mode, you know, money is a big thing for them and it can bring out that irrational side. I think I can just go to ice if I need to when people get like that and it just seems to help calm them down.
Yeah. And if that fails, know how to duck.
Another really quick story, and I won't give you the whole story, but I sold a block of land for a truck driver one day. I'd been dealing with his wife all week. She's a florist. She said, oh, he's an interstate truck driver. He'll be home at 5 o'clock on Friday, I think it was again. So I organised to meet at the house with the contract, and I reckon he'd taken quite a few pills to get himself home. And a massive man, like a foot taller than me, about 3 foot wider, he came into the house and, again, didn't have quite what he wanted on the contract. And he was chasing me around the table. I don't know what he was going to do, but I didn't let him catch me.
Yeah, no. I reckon some skills there are important in several careers, mine too. So you eventually became a franchise owner too. So when did you take the leap into business ownership?
I did 6 years commission-only sales at the start there. Peter left Browns Plains 6 months after I started there, went up to Sunnybank Hills. He was offered a sales manager's role up there, and the office was really struggling. So he went up. His brother followed him a few months later, and I followed, I think it was, just before Christmas in 89. And again, Peter said, look, this place has the potential to be anything. And if you knew him, you sort of just say, yes, yeah, good idea. I just wanted to know about where I'd go make my next sale, to be honest. So 6 years of that, and it really did start to go quite well. But I observed him as the manager, in my opinion, not doing a whole lot. So I thought, I'm working pretty hard here in sales. I reckon I should get into management. So truth be known, I was a horrible manager when I first started because I was so naive and silly. But anyway, someone gave me a job. The first bloke I went and ran an office for told me all sorts of lies, and I was too silly to understand that at the time, so I didn't last there too long. Then another bloke gave me his business to run. He didn't tell me the overdraft was 30,000 over its limit when he put me in charge, but we got that back in the black hat, and he was a great man. He was also the man who taught me to auctioneer. So that was a good experience, even though it was a hard experience. And then about the time I was thinking I should get out of there, there was a corporate role came up. One of the area managers, regional managers had left. I rang up the state manager and I said, what about me? And he said, what about you? I said, I reckon I can do that. I had no idea what they did, but again, I thought that looked like something that might be worth doing. Yeah, I went for an interview and they gave me the job. I still to this day don't know why. And I spent 8 years there. I never thought I would. I always thought I was just going in there just to probably help them be better, which was a bit naive again, and perhaps to see where my next thing would be back in the field. I think my heart was always in the field. I did find a business I was going to buy and get into the field. And I went to Peter and said, look, I wouldn't mind a third party look at this. He's, as I say, very astute and doing a great job. And he talked me out of it. What I didn't know was that at the time, I think he was a bit tired. So he offered me a partnership to come back as sales manager. So 2002, I went back as a sales manager, and he'd taken the business to number 9 in the network by then. So it was a great place to go back to. And I think it took us about another 6 years to take it to number 1 in the network.
Yeah, and he still is number 1, isn't he?
Still is. It's a great business. Fantastic. Just a machine.
And a nice guy. I met him once, actually. He's a lovely guy, yeah.
He is. Fantastic. Yep.
So tell me about the habits of top-performing agents. So obviously you've seen a lot of agents both in from a regional corporate office level and also from actually working as a sales manager in some of these top-performing offices. So what do you see as the non-negotiables for a salesperson right now?
The traits, if I can just start there, they're consistently doing all the things that need to be done. They've got the discipline to say no to all that other stuff that goes. You know, real estate offices are, I used to say to people, I actually run an adult daycare centre because you can have a lot of fun. You get a big group of real estate agents together. It can be a lot of fun every day, but someone's got to be focused on getting some work done. And the top people, they've just got that in them. They're better organised. They get into their calls. It's all about communication. They understand volume and they're prepared to put in the work to do that. You see so many others that have a burst and then they lay off and then they might have another burst when they're running out of money, but not the top performers for a number of different reasons, I think. But you asked what they do. It's, again, their communication. It's the courage to have those conversations that need to be had, done in a professional manner. But, again, they're out there moving things along. Since sort of working with the Captain's Club members, we've done all sorts of, I guess, looking at what makes a Captain's Club person. It's not male or female. It's not a former career. It's not any particular education they may have had. They just get more done in the same time as other people. Just appreciate the value of their time and they do what needs to be done.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually, because we've been talking a lot about time management and productivity in this program Accelerate that we've been doing with LJ Hooker. So let me ask you the question. Let's just say I reduce your working hours in a day to 3. Actually, I'll be generous. Let me halve them to 4 instead of a standard 8. And let's say you've got 12 things on your to-do list at the moment, but you've only got 4 hours to do the things that you must do. So as a salesperson, what do you think they are?
I call it the production work. The production work is, who are my future sellers? You've got to be talking to some of them every day. Your current buyers that might be ready to perhaps take some action, whether you can get them back for a second inspection, whether you've got a new listing you can show them, et cetera. And then I just think all salespeople need to be finding some new contacts consistently too. That funnel that everyone talks about. You've got to keep topping up the funnel. If you don't keep adding new people in, you won't ever see growth. So that's where the real focus has to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move to one of your other passions, which is auctioneering. So you've called over 4,300 auctions for LJ Hooker.
As of last Saturday, 4,344.
Well, there you go. I'm closer on that one. Thank goodness. Do you have a most memorable sale?
You talk about the ones with the 30, 40 and 50 bids and all the fun that they are, but probably, you know, the ones where I'm working with newer salespeople and they come and say, oh, look, just pass it in, and you say to them, well, no, hang on, I want you to go to this person and say this and then come and tell me how they react. I'll be watching, obviously, and putting deals together that perhaps others might have struggled to do, and then, you know, seeing the look on their faces and knowing that they're going to continue to then go out and preach the auction system to people. That, I think, is where I get a lot of joy.
Yeah. So with the auction system at the moment, there are a lot of other methods of sale that we find out there at the moment. Do you still believe that auction is the ultimate way to sell a property?
Absolutely. I just think there's a whole lot of people in this industry that, for whatever reason, they overly complicate things. To me, if you're going to sell something with a price, put a price on it. That's fine. You know, it's a great way. Plenty of properties get sold that way. If you're not, take it to auction and run the process properly. Get someone who does know what they're doing with the process to help you with that and do it. And everything else in between is just someone trying to cut corners and or not prepared to have the conversations. Or I know salespeople who say to me, oh, I just don't want the stress. I think to myself, well, isn't it more stressful to take 8 weeks to sell something when if you amped up your energy and got good at this, and you had them turning over in 3 and 4 weeks on a regular basis, why wouldn't you go to take that option? But maybe I'm biased.
Yeah, no, I definitely think, you know, there's room for all different types in all different markets, because we've seen Australia particularly is not just one type of market in one type of area.
Being someone who's been calling auctions in the suburbs of Brisbane for as long as I have, when I started, it wasn't accepted. It wasn't anything anyone wanted to know. There weren't shows on TV. You know, we really had to fight against the tide to get it up and going. But these days, with the help of it being on TV, a lot more people coming from the other states who are more used to the method. There's a whole host of reasons. I'd love to think we've got better at it as well. But there's just so many good stories that you can share that just would never have happened any other way. Last weekend, had a gentleman whose wife was in a home. His two mature age daughters were with him. He's telling me how he bought the block of land in 1959, and you know, it took him 2 years to get the trees pulled off the block. And this is right in the heart of Brisbane these days, but not then, obviously. And it was just a lovely story. And then we went and sold it over 100,000 over reserve. You know, to go back inside to them and just see how excited they were, and they were going to go to the hospital and see mum afterwards and tell her, and that's just nice, you know, and there's no way anyone would have paid that except without the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. If I was a young agent thinking about going into or becoming an auctioneer, what advice would you give me?
Find someone who's practiced at it and get them to mentor you. There's too many young auctioneers that, like you can go to the Office of Fair Trading in various states and get a license pretty easily, I think, having stood there for 6 practice ones or whatever the number is these days. The bloke who taught me, Pat Moran, I mentioned him earlier, I got in his, he used to drive a big Nissan patrol wagon. I used to get in there every Saturday for a year and drive around with him. And, you know, we previewed every auction, we reviewed every auction. All I did was call the terms and conditions for him for many months, and gradually he worked me into it. But we can all see someone put up their hand, we can all hear someone make a bid, but we can't all sense what they're thinking, even when they don't realize it themselves. That's a skill that you grow over a period of time. I again feel very blessed that Pat put a year of hard work into me, and some of the conversations we had in his truck in between auctions is some of the best stuff that I ever learned.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily about adding up or being funny. I mean, both are important, right? But it is about being able to read that person when there's more there or not more there or, yeah.
And knowing that the person over on the right who hasn't done a thing yet is just sitting back waiting and got to draw them in at some point, you know, and you're not rushing to close it down when they haven't had a chance. And, yeah, 1,000 scenarios, but So if you found someone to do it, I would hugely encourage that. I guess I think the auctioneers fraternity probably don't want a whole lot of more competition. It's hard yards out there, but it's fantastic. It keeps me sane. It keeps me in the field every weekend dealing with real people. So I think a lot of what I do corporately still has a sense of relevance. You know, I haven't been sitting in the office for years not practicing. I think that makes a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And the agents also must feel like you're in the trenches with them as well.
As I say, I absolutely love it. I'd crawl over broken glass to do it.
Interestingly, I mean, COVID's changed auctions slightly, or it's not so bad in Queensland now. We had plans to move to Queensland, but Anastasia won't let us in. sold the office. I'm not sure what we're doing now. But how have you seen COVID change auctions where you're at?
Yeah, well, like that Tuesday night that Scott Morrison came on TV and said no more or shut down or whatever his words were, I had 8 booked for that Saturday. Wow. So Wednesday was a whole lot of phone calls to a whole lot of people. I decided that Damien Cooley's Auction Now platform, I liked the look and feel of that. Damien was good enough, myself and a couple of others in our team. He gave us a good hour or two's training on the Thursday. And on the Saturday, did six cancelled, but 2 went ahead. We sold the first one under the hammer, talking to the back of a phone, I call it. But, it was a different experience. So we stuck at that, but to the point that now I'm doing them on-site and online. I've continued to use the program. I think there's a lot of benefits from a compliance point of view, from a registration point of view, from a record-keeping point of view, from a participation point of view. There's still people who don't want to come and stand in a group at an auction. And then there's always the interstate and external people that makes it easier for them to participate. So as an auctioneer, I would prefer to have people in front of me that I can eyeball and get a better sense of what they're doing. But this is a nice compliment. And so we've kept using it and plan to continue to do so.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought about that actually, but the participation angle, I suppose you could actually sort of reflect on that. You could look at who had participated and then look at what the campaign was like and then make tweaks based on whether it was highly participated in and a good campaign, and then you really do know what good looks like in an auction.
Yeah, the other thing about it, people can follow the auction. So at the end, you can print out a report. And the number of times I've said to the salespeople, look, there's 4 or 5 or 6 people who've viewed that auction. Is their email address and their mobile phone number, and they say, oh, I don't know any of them. So, well, I'd be making a call there. There's something going on, you know. So it's finding a few more contacts as well. So, yeah, as I say, a lot of benefits. And I say to everyone, you know, if a silly old fellow like me can embrace this and use it, you know, what's wrong with the rest of you, sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Although I wouldn't say you're silly or old. When you look back over your career, is there a particular moment or experience that stands out for you?
2010, we had a conference in Thailand, and I'd competed in a few auctioneer competitions. I had been competing for probably 7 years in various different ones, but I won the LJ Hooker International Auctioneer. That was the 4th time I'd done it. They'd created a bit of a memorial award for anyone who'd won it 3 times in a row. The office was the number one office in the network, and we're the top sales office in the network for the first time. And that was pretty special. That was sort of top of the mountain stuff. So, yeah, and a lot of hard work had gone into the business, my own personal career, you know, to have that all there. I took my wife and daughters over to this first time I ever take them to a conference. So they sort of got to experience that at an age where I think they appreciated it. So probably the real highlight for me, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. So some general advice questions for you for some of the newer agents in the industry. What is some advice that you would give to younger people that are just starting out in real estate right now?
You've got to understand, if you're starting out new, wouldn't matter what marketplace you're in, there's going to be some people who are doing well and have experience and have reputation, and coming up against them is going to be hard work. So if you're going to do that, if you think you're just going to go out and match them with what they do, you're probably not getting it right. Got to go and find the ways to, you know, have a perception of activity. And that is getting out on the streets, that is getting involved in your community, that is being on the phone more often than not, that is doing market updates and appraisals as often as you can for anyone you can. And your energy level has to be through the roof, because what you lack in knowledge, you've got to overcompensate with energy and enthusiasm. As your knowledge and experience come up, if you can maintain the energy enthusiasm levels, well, you've got it all. If that drops a little, well, that's all right. Experience will help out. But you've just got to find a way to get on the shopping list of all of these people who are out there, not necessarily in real estate mode, but their receptors are sort of taking note. And when they come into real estate mode, if you leave it for them to do some research with the likes of REA and Rate My Agent and these types of things, well, there's two or three people that are going to come up every time. Now, the good thing is we know those two or three people, as much business as they're doing, they're not doing it all. So there is opportunity. So if you can get yourself on the shopping list and get invited out and get crushed every time you miss a listing, but understand it's going to happen and just get through that period, well, it's amazing how you can get momentum thereafter.
It does seem like that. I was just talking to someone the other day that said your first year might be not so great, but then after that, if you've put in the hard yards, it gets a bit easier.
And the other thing is these days, get all your contacts into your CRM and embrace all of the marketing opportunities, social, digital. That is just so clever what you can now do to expand your world far quicker than at any time in the past. Embrace it, use it. If you can't get someone to do it and just do as whatever the lists are that they produce for you, do it, do it, do it, do it.
You can't mistake motion for action, can you?
No.
You just got to do it. So as a leader, what sort of advice would you give to people moving into a leadership role or who might be listening to this thinking about moving into leadership right now?
I think business ownership, if you can understand that you are about to become the custodian of an entity, if you treat it as a living, breathing thing that you're responsible for keeping healthy and growing, you won't know it all. Play to your strengths. You've got to be the advisor, the consultant, the worker, the accountant, the strategist. There's so many different roles. There's very few people I've ever seen that are good in every area. Work out the bits that you are good at, pour your heart and soul into those, find good people to give you the advice in the other areas, and learn. You've got to be all over it as a business owner. You can't not understand that things are going to change every day. Just when you think you've got a good team, someone leaves and goes to the opposition for no apparent reason. There's always a reason. But you know, just when you think your marketing's going well, someone introduces something else and you've got to go and learn that. Stay ahead of whatever's going on. Quick little plug, you know, being part of a group like LJ Hooker, well, you know, a lot of that is done for you. So again, embrace the support that you're given by people who are good in those areas.
So you've seen a few cycles, and this is sort of similar to some of the other ones that we might have seen, or maybe it's not similar, but what is your advice to people who might be doing it tough through this period?
What we're seeing is volume of sales down. Prices really, I can't speak for everywhere, but prices aren't as impacted as I think the national media would have loved it to happen. It would have been a bit more sensational for them. So if numbers are down, that might mean that a few agents in your area might just not be with us in 6 or 12 months' time. You've got to make a decision. Are you going to be one of them or not? Because the pie does shrink and grow at different times in your career, but you've just got to protect your slice and make a decision what your slice is and then do whatever it takes to get there. There are some years where, you know, things are good and you have a successful year and you think, I'm doing it pretty good. The next year, if things turn like they have this year, you might have to do three times the work to make the same amount. That's a choice. That's a choice. So what size slice of the pie do you want and how hard are you prepared to work for it? Because it is going on out there. We look at all these figures. It's nothing like as dramatic as a lot of people would have thought it might have been.
Yeah, even what the Commonwealth Bank said, 30%, and then last week they revised it down to 12, and hopefully they'll be revising it down again.
Yeah, I don't think we're completely through it yet, but that's one thing about this industry. There are a lot of optimistic, hardworking people who just find a way, and that's got to be in your DNA, I think. And so if you're a bit defeatist and you're in the corner in the fetal position, go and find another career. There's easier things to do.
What does the next 12 months look like for you? Do you have any future goals?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always got projects. Do a little bit of property stuff on the side. There's always some things that I'm excited about achieving. And you asked the question earlier about the business leadership. That business, you will spend most of what you earn as an employee or a business owner, unless you make a decision that some money has to be put aside for other things. You know, the business is the cash flow machine. That's not necessarily where you're going to make all your money. So go and seek out these other opportunities, invest wisely, be investing money. So if you get into business and you get good at it, there's a bit of extra. Do something really smart with the extra. So I've always had my goals, always still have. At some point when that perhaps slows up, well, I probably won't turn up anymore. But for now, I have to keep going because there's too many things that have to be done.
Oh, it's way too interesting too right now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think there are a lot of people who appreciate the sort of help and support that we're able to give.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, some with your experience, it must be very helpful to a lot of people out there. So keep up the amazing work.
Thank you. Look, there's a couple of young people that sort of once a week call. So I won't call it coaching. It probably is down that avenue. But over the last year, to see what a couple of them have achieved, they're doing it all. If I'm 0.5% of the credit, that's about it. But they're keeping me young. I enjoy their wins, their successes. I enjoy helping them, putting them back together when the weeks aren't going too well. And there's a lot of people very good to me on my way up through the ranks. So I think it's important that myself and others like me hang around and give a bit back before we fade away.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been fantastic chatting to you on the podcast for sure. And thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and some of your experiences. It's been incredible. So if there was one thing that you would like everyone to remember or one thing that you'd like to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
Turn up every day with a great attitude. Then maybe those odd one or two that you can't, just don't go. Turn up with a great attitude. What we do is not that hard. What's hard sometimes is doing it every day. So just turn up with a great attitude and do what you know to do. And if you don't know to do it, find someone who can teach. It's really not that hard, Sam. It's, you know, have a conversation. There's a dozen conversations we have, half of them with buyers, half of them with sellers. Just make sure you have quite a few of those every day in a professional manner. You can't go too wrong.
And be happy.
Gotta be.
Absolutely. Paul Moore, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sam.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts. Visit eliteagentelevate.com.